Sports Talk Radio 580 CFRA. It's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 433 for this March the 24th, 2013. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call, coming to you live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa, and taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long-distance number. And I wanted to start off with a caveat. This has to do with some reports that came out this week, one earlier in the week claiming that 180,000 people die each year from consuming too much sugar, and the other, they're both Harvard University studies. The other one reported just a few days ago with the headline from CTV News, "More Fatal Food, Salty Diets Leading to 2.3 Million Deaths Each Year." So here's the conundrum. You know, we do know that multiple factors contribute to poor health outcomes, as it were. So yes, if you are going to consume lots of salt, sugar, fat, processed foods, you don't exercise, you smoke, you do a whole bunch of things that could be potentially, over the long term, harmful, you're more than likely, based on just statistical averages, to end up with a very bad health outcome. Heart attack, stroke, cancers, and such. But what I find very misleading, because I like to have information that is relevant, not information that alarms, that is sensationalistic, that sometimes bends things a little bit to try to literally hit you over the head repeatedly in order to be more aware, or at least they would like you to be more aware, of these particular health concerns and health risks to try to change behavior. Now, I can understand where that's coming from, but at the same time, when you look at both of these particular studies, they're not based on measuring anything in particular. I mean, the SALT study was, what they did is they analyzed 240 surveys of salt intake or sodium intake in 50 countries between 1990 and 2010. They then looked at studies that measured how high amounts of sodium affected blood pressure and the risk of cardiovascular disease. And then they used a mathematical model, statistical model, to calculate how many people they believe would die from this type of consumption. But the numbers were never measured. And statistical models, as well as they work for certain things, when they're done properly and with the appropriate data to be able to use the model, they provide you with good results. But in this case, there are a lot of confounding factors and a lot of uncertainty. And the problem with uncertainty when you're using a statistical model is no matter how much you try to accommodate that uncertainty, you end up with a multiplying effect of one uncertainty after another after another. And the result is that your conclusions are highly speculative. And that's the problem with these particular studies with regards to the sugar and salt studies, is that they depended on a model to predict what would happen, but they haven't measured to see if that model indeed matches with the real-world effect. Now, granted, that can be difficult given the number of countries they looked at and the number of people that are involved, but nevertheless, I have an issue with the way this is being portrayed, as if this is the truth and you all should now hide under the covers and fear salt and sugar. You know, and I know, that consuming lots of salt is going to be a problem over the long term. It does affect blood pressure. It does for some people, with already pre-existing disease, diabetes, those that have high blood pressure, those that have heart disease, those that have peripheral vascular disease, those that have had strokes, you know, and the list goes on, that salt, excess salt, can be a problem. Similarly, for sugar, more calories, more weight gain, and yes, over the long term can be a problem, especially if it contributes to all that weight gain. And granted, when you go to a fast food restaurant or go to any place where they prepare foods, there is already a component of extra salt and sugar and fat that contribute to calories and salt intake. So you can't necessarily tease out each of those particular components and say, hey, you know, in that food, it was the salt that caused the problem. Or that food over there, well, the salt wasn't too bad, but the sugar levels were a bit high. Or that one over there, gee, that had a lot of fat in it. The point is that we are not binary creatures where you put in one input of one value and somehow coming out the other end is a disease process. It's a very complex system. Our genes react to our environment. It's something called epigenetics, where depending on your genetic makeup, certain foods, certain exposures, certain activities can contribute to some of these genes being switched on or off that can either prevent disease or contribute to disease. It is a very complex system. You can't, even if you're to go out and get your entire genome sequence, which is what a lot of people are doing as a means of trying to predict what their health problems may or may not be, what their longevity may or may not be, it's really not helpful because everybody has a different life. Everybody does different things. Your habits and behaviors are not the same as somebody else's. And so you could have two, and you see this with twin studies, you could have two people with almost identical genetics and yet have different health outcomes depending on what they did during their lifetime. And so again, these kind of studies, and I'd like to get your opinion about this. Are you getting fed up hearing these kind of studies where every day it's caffeine or salt or sugar or fat or this herbicide or pesticide or superfruit or supernutrient or on and on and on it goes, or this supplement or that supplement? Do you just eventually tune out? Do you finally say, you know, I've had enough, I'm just going to live my life? You guys are trying to tell me what to do all the time. And as with anything, when you nag someone and keep telling them the same thing again and again, you eventually will tune out and the message gets lost. And so now you have potentially articles that have to scream it out because the attention span and the tolerance for this has been so suppressed. I'd say suppressed is the word, that you now are just not listening. So is that something that you're faced when you see that in the news? Do you just roll your eyes and go, oh, here we go again? Or do you look at it and say, you know, they're a bit over the top, but it does reflect somewhat the medical knowledge that we have today and the evidence that we have today. But I've already made the changes, so I'm not going to really pay that much attention to it anymore. So I'd like to know what you think about that, if you have an opinion about it. 521-TALK, 521-8255 is the number to call. *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is the number to call. And we're going to take a small break, and when we come back, we're going to get to the phone lines. We have Bill in his car, wants to talk about eye operations, and Henry in Ottawa would like to discuss enlarged prostate. We have a lot of other lines available. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. Are you fed up with studies and reports that are hitting you over the head about the latest salt, sugar, fat, nutrient, alternative medicine thing, you name it, and how it affects your health? I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
My dad and I used to get along when I was a kid. God, he was the coolest man alive. I remember one year, I guess I was about 7. All I wanted all year long was a dog. big dog. Got totally obsessed with it. Thought of nothing else. Well, my parents didn't have any money, and my father told me the only way I would get a dog would be if I prayed really, really hard. So I did. I prayed really hard. And that Christmas, a miracle. Dad went blind. So we had to get a dog.
580 CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
One talk, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And we are going to line one. And Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Very good. I have a couple questions for you.
Sure.
One, I was diagnosed in October by an eye surgeon that I needed to have my cataracts removed.
Okay.
Now, he said normally it would only take a couple weeks, but because of cutbacks, he wouldn't be able to do it until probably March. Mm-hmm. Now I contact him and he said it's or I didn't contact him, but his secretary, and it might be May or June before I get it done. I'm getting to a point now where I have great deal of difficulty. I can't read the paper. There's many things I can't do. And I'm just wondering why, because our population is aging.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they cutting back?
Yeah, this is. I think this has to do with the fact that the provincial government, when they signed the agreement with the physicians earlier on last year, that they reduced the fees that they were paying to the ophthalmologists, and as a result of that, they were having to cut back on their procedures in order to fulfill some of the obligations in that contract. And that's and that doesn't help you at all. Is this being done at the Eye Institute, or is it at? Is there a specific hospital that is involved in this, or where were you?
Be done at the Riverside.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you why this is happening. Why the delay? All I know is that people end up suffering when there are delays like this, right? I mean, especially if you can't.
It's frustrating.
Yeah, and you want to see, and.
Very true.
Yeah, and they're not, the delays that you see are delays that you see for eyes. You see the same thing for knee replacements and hip replacements, people waiting months or years before they get their lives back, and it really falls, they all fall into the same category. Now, I'm not sure if the cutbacks are also because of OR time, because what tends to happen with surgeons is that they are only given a certain day to do their surgery, and all the other days are either taken up by other people having to do their surgeries. So I'm not sure if it's hospital cutbacks as well to try to conserve and maintain their budgets, and so they reduce the hours available on those days. I'm not sure exactly what are all the contributing factors that would lead to the delays that you're experiencing, but those are likely some of the ones that are contributing to it. And again, that from a patient's point of view, it's irrelevant. Because you just want to have your stuff done.
It looks like I'm just going to have to live with it then. Another question I have for you is, I've been diagnosed with vasovagal.
Yes.
And I'd like to know what causes it and how can I prevent it?
A vasovagal reflex has to do with a nerve called the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is the longest nerve in your body. And it's derived from the vagus is... derived from the term, it's a Latin term that means the wanderer. And it is a nerve that runs right from your brainstem all the way down to the distal two-thirds of your large intestine. So that's how long it goes. And it branches off into multiple little nerves all over the place. It is responsible for part of your nausea response, fainting response, dilates your blood vessels. It does a whole host of things. And so what happens is that if it is stimulated, and by stimulated it can be abdominal pain, severe pain, excessive fright, standing up too quickly, a whole bunch of things that will trigger this particular nerve. And what tends to happen is your blood pressure will drop. And when your blood pressure drops, you tend to feel faint or feel like you're going to black out, or you can get nauseated. That's what a vasovagal reflex is. It also can be done, for example, if you're straining. You know, someone is really constipated, for example, and they're really straining, that can cause it as well. So the prevention is more to find out exactly what part of that mechanism, what the triggering factor is that leads to that in your specific case. And for some people, it's easier said than done, but in some cases, it's avoiding a particular activity that does that. So for some people, for example, there's a condition called orthostatic hypotension, where if people stand up too quickly, their blood pressure drops, their body doesn't have the rapid response it used to have, and they feel faint. And so they have to get up more slowly in order for their body to accommodate. Similarly, for vasovagal, it's if you're exerting yourself, you know, some people, if they're lifting weights, some people that at work, if they're lifting boxes or doing something that requires an effort where they have to hold their breath, that type of thing, they may have to modify and reduce that. Under what circumstances do you find this happens for you?
For me, I can feel fine in the morning.
Yeah.
The last time I had an attack, I felt fine in the morning. My wife was driving me over to our daughter-in-law's.
Yeah.
And my stomach started cramping.
Yeah.
And then I had diarrhea, and then I could feel my blood pressure dropping, sweat pouring off my head. It wasn't a bad attack. I've had a couple where I've had to call the ambulance because I was just, my wife was very scared.
Right.
My blood pressure one time went down to 59 over 37.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering, if I just lie back and relax, will it go away? Or should I call an ambulance should my wife call an ambulance when it gets very bad?
Usually vasovagal attacks will resolve if you lie down flat. And if you raise your legs, because what happens is that you increase blood flow to your head, and that way you don't feel as faint anymore. But your body will recover, given that it's a nerve reflex. It's not a disease process per se. It's extremely annoying when that happens. But in this case, what you mentioned was preceded by that stomach cramps, which is, as I mentioned, intestinal cramps or pain or abdominal pain can do that. But usually it is, if you feel it coming on, you lie down. Because essentially another term for it is a fainting spell. And so the way to avoid that is you lie down, you put your feet up, you increase blood flow to the head, and you tend to mitigate that fainting effect. And then within about 5 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes, it completely resolves, and then you can get up and continue doing your usual stuff.
Yeah, sometimes it lasts for me an hour, even sometimes hour and a half.
If it's lasting an hour and a half, then we're dealing with something else. Then you may be having a triggering factor, but an hour and a half is a long time for a vasovagal reflex, and that I would say then needs to be evaluated, because that is way too long. Because usually it should be only several minutes, because your body's nervous system, it's called the autonomic nervous system, will come into play and should reverse that process for you relatively quickly. And if your pressure is still down and it's an hour, there's something else going on. I would look at cardiovascular things if it hasn't been done yet, seeing a cardiologist if this is ongoing, because that bill is not normal if it's going on that long.
Well, a cardiologist would be the best bet for me.
A cardiologist would probably be the best bet.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Dr. Made me feel better.
You're very welcome, Bill.
Okay, thank you.
All the best.
Bye now.
Bye-bye now. We're going to take a small break for the news, and when we come back, we have a very patient Henry. I promise you are next in line, and we also have three other callers. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long-distance number. Never I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call, and back with your calls right after the news.
When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And as promised, good afternoon to Henry in Ottawa. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Yes.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm 77 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I had BPH.
Yes.
For about 2 to 3 years now. And my doctor gave me Evodot combined with Flomax.
Flomax, yes.
Yes. But those pills I took it for a few years, it seemed to be giving me a lot of congestion in my nose. I got a lot of problems breathing in. I went to see a nose specialist. Even he is pinpoint at the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to my urology, and he told me the only way you don't want to take medicine is go for this green light laser therapy.
Right.
What do you know about this, Dr. Dworkin?
Well, what they're planning to do with the laser therapy is they literally burn away a bit of the prostate gland.
Yes.
To make the urethra a bit wider, right? And so, because part of the issue with benign prostatic hypertrophy is as the prostate gland gets larger, and for most men it does over time, it squeezes on the urethra, which is the tube that connects the bladder through to the end of the penis, and so it acts as a pressure valve.
Yes.
And so as it gets larger, it squeezes on that. It makes it more difficult to urinate. The bladder gets over-distended. It can cause a lot of damage and a lot of pain. So the surgery in itself, the laser is considered to be a little less damaging in that it's more selective. You aim the laser at a particular area. They're, because the other procedure is something called where they take literally a little blade and it spins and they take away a bit of the prostate that way. So what they're trying to do with the laser is to minimize the damage, because any kind of prostate surgery has side effects, right? There's a potential effects.
Yes.
And so you can have pain, you can have sexual dysfunction. You can
urinate. I think it's at the butt. Sometimes you take a blood come out too, right?
There can be bleeding. That usually settles down after a while. Mm-hmm. So really, what you're looking at, Henry, is determining whether the nasal congestion is a fair trade-off for a properly functioning prostate and urinary system versus potential risks of the surgery. So that's
what do you think of the successful? Do you know any of your patients at my age doing the same thing, getting worse or what? I don't know.
I haven't had too many patients who have had this done, so I wouldn't be giving you accurate information because I wouldn't have that many numbers to look at that.
Because I'm 77 years old. I seem to be very healthy. I go into the gym myself. I still live in my own house.
Right.
I do my own cooking in it, but if I do this, it completely knocks me down. I have to go to the OH home, then I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. So I just want to I asked my family doctor, and he said he can advise me to one thing and another thing.
Well,
because one thing,
it does boil down to quality of life. So you're absolutely correct.
Right now I'm quite okay, but I when I listen to your show quite some time ago, you say that if I take this two kind of pill, take it for a while, I could take lay it off for a while, then I will lay off for a few months or something like that. No,
it is possible to do that. The thing to keep in mind is that the process that's leading to the prostate being enlarged is still there. So if you stop the medication, you may see some symptoms return over time. The other issue is with the nasal congestion. Was there any treatment given to see if you could reduce the nasal congestion?
Did they my nose specialist gave me the nose spray, but it doesn't do any trick in it. He said that is the pill you take it every day. So.
Right. Now, when you use the nasal spray, though, one of the reasons why the nasal spray does not work has to do with the technique of how the spray was inserted or the nozzle was inserted into the nose.
Well, I was pointing right to what inside, right? To what the in. That's what he told me. Pointed right to what the into the knee the inside the wall there. Anyway.
Okay, because usually, the proper angle to put the nasal spray is, if you feel on the back of your head, there's a little bump, sort of at the base of your neck.
Right.
That bump.
Yes.
You aim the nozzle of the spray, you put that into the nose, and you point it at that bump on the back of the head.
Yeah.
And that's the angle for the spray to get to the back of the nose. Because a lot of times if people are spraying and it doesn't go all the way back, you don't get any effect. The spray doesn't get to where it's supposed to go.
So what should I do? So I am you using nose spray more almost like 1 to 2 years because it didn't work, so I didn't bother to use it.
Right.
So I go get the doctor to prescribe me if it use it again. Or
I would try it again, especially if the technique was not done properly.
Do you know any special spray that could be do more better than the other one, or is they all
the
same?
They're all essentially the same. I find the once a day sprays tend to be a little bit easier to use than having to do multiple sprays all day long.
Oh, okay.
So you may want to ask your physician for a once a day spray, and also for them to demonstrate the proper way to apply it, so that way you know at least if you do this for 7 or 10 days. And if you do that and it's not working, you know that it definitely is not going to help you.
Yeah.
But it would be a shame to have surgery and not know for sure whether the spray helped or not, because it's always better. My opinion is if you can avoid surgery, that's better.
I know, because I was in a liver side about a year ago. The urinology already looked inside my prostate.
Right.
It seemed to be just a little bit large, but he said it's everything okay inside.
Right.
You know, they don't have any lump or bump or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's I really don't want to do it, but if take me off from this kind of congestion while I sleep, I do exercise, I could hardly breathe through my mouth.
Anyway. Right. Well, I would speak to your physician about that, and also perhaps maybe even asking him about stopping the medication from time to time, or at least stopping one of the two medications from time to time, to see which one is responsible. And, you know, that may also help you along the way. But again, Henry, it really is going to boil down to what you're prepared to put up with.
Okay.
But I wish you the best.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
And a good afternoon to Andrea in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Who?
Andrea.
Andrea.
Hi.
Hi. How much do you know about menopause?
I'd say I know something about
something.
It. Yes.
How about swollen boobs?
Swollen, sorry?
Swollen boobs.
Yeah.
Okay. Painful.
Mm-hmm.
Itchy ankles.
So now I guess I should ask you is, are you in menopause right now?
Yes.
Okay. So you have not had a period at all?
Not at all for like 3 years.
For 3 years. And have these symptoms been there for 3 years, or is this something new?
They come and go with the hot flashes.
Okay.
Okay. Are these normal?
It can be. Usually after 3 years of menopause, you would expect to have much less in terms of symptoms. Usually when you have breast tenderness, it usually is an effect of estrogen, so that, you know, you may still be having some cycling if your breasts get, do they get swollen as well? They get sore and swollen?
They are swollen. I am bloated like you couldn't believe, and I've got a pain in my ovary area.
Okay. So what needs to happen if you're having that kind of, now have you had any surgeries in the past? Any?
Never.
Nothing?
No, I'm the one person in my whole family that has never gone through this stuff.
Okay. So what this would require is, there's some blood work that would be done to evaluate thyroid function, even checking to see if there is menopause. I don't know if you had that blood test done or not.
Yes, I have. Okay. I'm actually clear on that one. I'm good.
So that was a definitive for menopause?
Yes.
Okay, so usually when you're having, especially breast tenderness, it is a hormone effect. So,
yes, I know that.
Now, are you taking any estrogen or anything?
No.
Nothing
no,
like
I'm
that?
No, I'm going through this naturally.
Okay. Well, I would speak to your physician about having certain blood work done, especially when the breasts are tender and swollen, to check estrogen levels to see if they are elevated or not compared to when you're not having those symptoms, because from what you're describing, they come and go.
Okay. And yes, so that, they do.
So that way we'll be able to mark and see exactly what your body is doing, that if this is an estrogen effect, that is, if your body is making more estrogen from time to time, it would explain things for you. I'm not sure that you would do much to change that, because one of the ways to change that would be to take hormone replacement therapy to try
no,
to
No, I want
to
go this naturally.
Yeah, and that's fine. So, yeah. But at least you'll get your answer. But there really isn't too much you can do to change that.
Okay.
That's all I can tell you, Andrea, because, again, if you're having these kind of symptoms, it's your body's response to usually hormone fluctuations, and eventually what will happen is that will even itself out and you won't have that experience anymore, but it can take a bit more time.
Okay. This is something that I can be comfortable with, though.
It's something that over time you'll become comfortable with, but again, with no use of any medications at all, it's just going to take your body time over a natural time frame for that to resolve itself.
Well, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, Andrea.
Well, I feel comfortable with that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All the best.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. We're going to take a small break, and when we come back, we will have Audrey, who's been waiting a bit of time, wants to talk about diet. We have James in Gatineau, would like to discuss carpal tunnel syndrome, and several other callers as well. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long-distance number. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you are listening to Sunday House Call.
And I saw my dentist, too, another beauty. I said to him, Doc, look at my teeth. They're all getting yellow. He told me to wear a brown necktie.
Oh, you got that flu? Drink a lot of fluids and get plenty of rest. Man, I'm glad I ran into you. I was going to do wind sprints and dehydrate myself. Are you sure you're not a doctor?
And my doctor, he don't help either. He told me to run 5 miles a day for 2 weeks. I called him up. I said, Doc, I'm 70 miles from my house. What a doctor. Well, one time I saw him, he gave me sleeping pills. He told me to take them whenever I wake up.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Just before we get back to the phone lines, I wanted to follow up on that call we had with Andrea with the breast tenderness. And she said she also mentioned that she was having abdominal pain or pelvic pain or pain around the ovaries. And what I would suggest is when you see your physician to mention that, because you may want to get a pelvic ultrasound just to look at the ovaries as well, because that's where hormone production will come from. And if it was 3 years that you've had menopause and these symptoms are relatively new, you just want to see what's going on there, as well as doing thyroid function and estrogen levels and some other hormone tests at the same time. So I just thought I would follow that up. I was thinking of that over the break, just what else we would do just to make sure that we're not missing the boat on anything. So I hope you're still listening, Andrea. I would speak to your physician about a pelvic ultrasound and various testing for different hormones that would contribute to the discomfort that you're having. We're going to go to line four and Audrey in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Is that Audrey?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's me.
Yes. Hi, Audrey.
I had recent cataract surgery, and I was extremely apprehensive about it.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering the days when people had cataract surgery and lay in a dark room for I don't know how long with their eyes covered.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a great thing. I cannot believe it. So anyone who is having apprehension about it, it was great.
Yeah, it's very different now. The technology is very different. It's a very quick procedure, very safe procedure, and it gives people their sight back.
Yes, it absolutely does. And I can remember when I was in high school, nobody wanted to ever wear glasses because we were used to that saying, guys never make passes at girls who wear glasses. But nobody even knew what the passes were, but it sounded very sophisticated, you know?
Yes.
But anyway, I so miss my glasses, Dr. Horkin, and I am being very serious.
Uh-huh.
I am going out to get a pair of good stylish glasses with just glass in them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean it, in seriousness. I just miss them. I wake up in the morning and my hand goes out to the night table looking for the glasses, which aren't there. Mind you, I need reading glasses for the paper.
Mm-hmm.
But if anyone is at all apprehensive, I would urge that they not be.
Well, thanks for letting us know, Audrey.
Yeah, it's a very different procedure than it used to be.
Fantastic. Well, all the best to you.
Thank you kindly.
Okay, bye-bye now. Over to line five, and James in Gatineau, good afternoon.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Forgive my accent. My main language is French, but I'll do my best.
Oh, don't worry about it. Not a problem.
Okay, about 72 hours ago, I guess 3 days,
mm-hmm.
I woke up and had a very, my right hand, I would say my thumb, my index, and my major were very numb, as if you know how you sleep sometimes, sleep on your arm and you get numb?
Mm-hmm.
So I figured it would go away after a while, but it hasn't. It's been 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I have absolutely no strength in my wrist. Like, if I go to pick up an object palm down,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I can't even lift 2 or 3 pounds without my wrist giving out. So I was wondering what's going on with that. And I have a numbness on the top of my hand.
On the top as well.
Yeah.
This...
On the left. So it's my right hand. So
yeah.
On the left side of my right hand, it's pretty much all numb
okay.
on the top.
And this started 3 days ago?
Yeah, it's been 3 days and hasn't gone away.
Was there any injury or anything with that hand around that time or for the days before that?
Actually, no. I figure it happened while I was sleeping because I woke up and...
But as you said, But as you said, the numbness is still there, and there's weakness mm-hmm. in the hand. And the hand itself is weak. You can't lift up things very well.
Palm down.
Yeah,
I can't even lift up 2 pounds without my wrist bending and giving out.
Okay, well, this doesn't sound like carpal tunnel syndrome per se, because carpal tunnel syndrome is when the nerve in the wrist gets compressed. But when you decompress it, and again, you haven't had any injury and you've never had this before. This is a sudden change in sensation in your hand.
Yes,
so
it is.
So that's disconcerting to me, because usually with carpal tunnel, yes, you can wake up at night, you shake your hand a bit to try and get the numbness out, and numbness will disappear. But you're also experiencing weakness and an inability to grip things as well as you used to. And
exactly.
And that doesn't sound too good. So this
okay.
So what I would say, James, is that if you have a physician, you need to see them this week, if not tomorrow, and have this hand looked at. You need to have the hand evaluated for any obstruction of the nerve, for any conditions that can cause nerve damage in the hand. To look, it may require a test that actually tests how well the nerve moves electricity up and down. It's called an electromyogram, in order to evaluate that condition, because, again, it's not the way carpal tunnel syndrome would usually present itself. It's usually, this sounds more of an acute injury to the hand for whatever reason. Something has happened to cause some harm in that area of the wrist. And again, numbness like that goes on and doesn't disappear can lead to muscle damage over time, because the nerve is required to keep the muscle strong. And if you're not able to have that nerve function properly, you can suffer functional change in that hand and over the long term, more permanent damage to the hand. So I would get this checked out tomorrow to have the appropriate investigations done, because, again, 3 days of numbness without it going away is not a normal thing.
Okay, and there's absolutely no pain. I have absolutely no pain.
And
just numbness and weakness.
That's it. And you don't have to have pain per se, but the fact that it's numb and weak tells us that there is some nerve or muscle problem that's going on, and it's likely nerve that's going on in this hand. And we need to determine what's doing that, because as with anything, especially with nerves, you don't want to wait too long because you can end up suffering more permanent type of damage.
Okay, so I should definitely get it checked out.
I would do it tomorrow. I would not wait.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your help.
You're very welcome, James.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. My apologies to Anne, Julie, and Alex. We have run out of time. I'll be on with Rob Snow this Wednesday, and as well next Sunday with another edition of Sunday House Call. My thanks to Dave Tripp for producing Sunday House Call. And as I said, we will be back next week with another edition. Thanks for all your calls. Have a great week.